Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And let me start off by telling you, encouraging you all, there are many things happening in the library this coming week. One of them is M.K. Asante, a professor here at Morgan State University, born in Zimbabwe of American parents, is out with his new book, Buck. It's a memoir. And he'll be at the Po Room this Monday, September the 16th at 6:30 p.m. If you want to hear M.K. Asante, he'll be on this show soon. He's also going to be on Anthony McCarthy's show, who will be interviewing him at the book festival. We'll have him on here for this program and for the fun drive and more. So he's an amazing thinker. You want to get in line up early to be at the Po Room, which is not a huge place. So if you want to hear M.K. Asante this Monday at the library. And speaking of the library, also this Monday, September 16th at 7 p.m., in the larger Wheeler Auditorium at the Central Branch of the Enoch Pratt Free Library at 400 Cathedral Street, the Homeless Persons Representation Project and the Maryland Affordable Housing Coalition are presenting the Importance of Housing Speaker Series. The keynote speaker will be Congressman Elijah Cummings. We talked to him earlier a couple of hours ago, and we talked about this, about the specifics of the National Housing Trust Fund. More information can be had at hprplaw.org. Also by listening to this program right now, because in the studio is the director of the Homeless Persons Representation Project, Antonia Fasinelli. It's been much longer since she's been on the air with us. Welcome back, Antonia.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Jeff Singer, founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, instructor now at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, continuing housing activist, who's delivering his white paper there as well on Monday night. Good to have you back in the studio, Jeff.
Quite an honor. Thank you, Mark.
And you'll be having lots of other folks here. Paul Graziano will be there.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And who else is going to be speaking that night?
Sheila Crowley, the executive director of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, which is the primary national advocacy group that is promoting funding for the National Housing Trust Fund. And Trudy McFall, who is the president of Homes for America, an affordable housing developer in Maryland, and also president of the Maryland Affordable Housing Coalition, as well as Mr. Singer on the panel.
So let's start with this trust fund. We didn't have much chance to talk to Congressman Cummings about this because we focused a great deal on Syria when he was on. But the National Housing Trust, this is something that's been in effect for a while but ineffectual, right?
Yes. Indeed, the National Housing Trust Fund itself was created by legislation in 2008, but it's been unfunded since that date. And so the advocacy movement at the moment is to get the trust fund funded so that we can use funds to develop critical affordable housing in our local communities.
So now what do you expect to come out of this? This is an interesting crew you have here. I mean, there's a crew that to be speaking. I mean, Elijah's going to talk about the importance of doing this. This is one of his issues. But over the years, Jeff Singer, I mean, you know, you've done a lot of work and built this Healthcare for the Homeless, helped build it with a lot of other people, but sometimes been at odds with state and city housing having affordable housing and public housing in Baltimore. So
that's correct. And we think that this kind of event, which brings together folks who have different histories and experiences around an educational opportunity to learn more, not only about what is, but what could be. So that what we expect to come out of this is first a good dialogue about what we have done and why it hasn't worked, and now what we can do and why it can work.
Sorry, let's talk about what this National Housing Trust Fund would do, could do, because clearly this is a thing that has never been funded.
Correct.
For numerous reasons. No money was ever put in it. If money had put in it, what would we have? If money is put in it, what will we have?
Sure. So the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has estimated that for every $5 billion put in the trust fund, and we'll talk in a minute about how such money might get put in the trust fund, but for every $5 billion put in the trust fund, that would generate approximately $69.6 million for the state of Maryland itself. That is such a critical source of funding for the state to be able to develop affordable housing for everyone who needs it. I think that what's important for the listeners to hear is that we have essentially lacked any kind of major federal funding stream to create affordable housing for many, many decades. The last major piece of legislation that created affordable housing was in 1986, which created the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program, which is a very necessary piece of legislation and a very necessary program for our communities, but actually doesn't create affordable housing for extremely low-income folks. It typically targets folks who are 50 or 60% of the area median income. The last time that we really saw major legislation that provided affordable housing for those who are earning below 30% of the area median income is actually the United States Housing Act of 1937, if you can believe. It's one of the reasons that we have seen such a gradual loss, and not so gradual loss, frankly, of affordable housing in our communities is the lack of federal investment in affordable housing. And that's what's so exciting about the National Housing Trust Fund itself, is that if it were funded, it would actually be the major solution to homelessness that we have been looking for so long. $69.6 million, while it wouldn't address housing for every homeless person in Maryland, it would take such a big chunk out of the mass homelessness that we have today.
And Jeff, so from your perspective, because you've pushed a lot on this issue, and we've talked about the fact that one-third of Baltimoreans are home insecure.
Yes, that's one way to put it. They can't pay their rent, and they're facing homelessness every month when the rent is due.
So what is this? How does this address that? Or does it?
Oh, sure it does. If this bill worked out, if the trust fund were funded up to the level that this bill would, the one that changes the mortgage interest deduction, then we could build about 30,000 units of affordable housing in Maryland. And exactly what proportion would go to Baltimore hasn't been worked out, but it would be a substantial proportion. It's usually somewhere between a third and a half. If we could create 10,000 units of affordable housing in Baltimore, that would have a substantial impact not only on homelessness. We could get close to eliminating homelessness, but we could also eliminate that what you call housing insecurity, the notion that there's so many of our neighbors who can't pay their rent every month. There are over 100,000 eviction notices processed in Baltimore City every year by the landlords, mostly because people can't pay their rent. They don't have enough money.
And so, and clearly that's the issue here facing people in Baltimore and many other places, in Dorchester County, Cambridge, Maryland, lots of other places. This is what Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, the place like Montgomery County have attempted to do things by having inclusionary housing in their development, which has ameliorated some of the issues.
Yes, they've built 13,000 units of affordable housing since 1974 when they adopted their inclusionary housing law.
So as this housing trust fund has had no funding. We have an inclusionary law in Baltimore that has no teeth. A lot of gums, no teeth.
That's exactly right. It has not had the impact that the law has had in Montgomery County. And I know that this is an issue you've covered quite a bit on your show.
And we'll continue until it gets right.
Right. And we would certainly hope that the law could be improved and strengthened so that we could actually create more than a handful of housing units for folks who desperately need them. There's no question, though, that whatever tools we have in Baltimore to create affordable housing are going to be significantly strengthened with a federal investment in affordable housing. To the question that you asked earlier, we very much see eye to eye with Baltimore Housing and with the Housing Commissioner on the need for funding from the National Housing Trust Fund. That is a point on which we are absolutely on
which
the
is
same
good.
Page. Yes.
Really important.
Absolutely. And the Housing Commissioner on Monday night is going to be talking about how the funding from the National Housing Trust Fund is going to enable him and his department to get us closer to ending homelessness and providing housing to everyone, and frankly, much closer to the ideal of a human right to housing for everyone.
So this coming Monday night, when the focus will be on the Housing Trust Fund. It's going to be on the Housing Trust Fund.
Yes.
You're delivering a white paper as well, right?
Yes, and it is in part, in large measure, about the Housing Trust Fund, but it also provides some context for it. What is the situation of homelessness in the United States and in Baltimore? What is the situation of affordable housing in the United States and in Baltimore? What is the mortgage interest deduction? How did it come about? And why we should change it to make it more equitable? That's what a particular bill that Representative Keith Ellison from Minneapolis has introduced, and how that could fund the Housing Trust Fund while helping many Americans who currently own their own homes. They're buying them. They have mortgages. But they can't take advantage of the mortgage interest deduction.
Because?
Because, number one, you have to be able to have an income sufficient to not take the standard deduction when you fill out your federal taxes, but to itemize your deductions.
And if you don't itemize?
If you don't itemize, you don't get the mortgage interest deduction, and 24% of the American taxpayers don't get the mortgage interest deduction. Half of the people who buy homes through mortgages don't get the mortgage interest deduction.
And this law would change that?
They would change it from a mortgage interest deduction to a tax credit that everybody could take. So it's another way of addressing the horrible inequality that is growing in the United States.
So a couple of things here. I'm curious, our congressional delegation, where do they stand on this? On funding the Housing Trust Fund, where do they stand? Our 8 congressional representatives and our 2 senators.
That's right. Well, starting with Congressman Cummings, who will be speaking on Monday night, supports it. And in fact, Congressman Cummings sponsored legislation in 2011 to fund the National Housing Trust Fund. It's essentially what seems to be going on in Congress right now is figuring out what is going to be the most successful avenue to actually get the National Housing Trust Fund funded. I think that there is a consistent understanding that if we fund the National Housing Trust Fund, that will equal very important and good things for people in our communities. The question is how to do it and what kind of legislation is going to actually get that passed. Ultimately, Congressman Cummings' legislation did not pass Congress, obviously, and that's why the Ellison bill has been introduced.
Where do our other 7 sit on this? Do we know?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Be interesting to find out, though.
Indeed.
And Monday night, is part of an attempt to do that, not just to find out, but to influence the outcome of that. We have many legislators in Maryland who are, you know, sort of progressive, and I think if we can present them with good alternatives in a rational way, that we can get their support.
I'm very curious what our listeners might think at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. Maybe you're among that half of the homeowners in Maryland who cannot take the deduction. And would you like to see these changes giving you a tax credit and what that would mean for a housing trust fund? What are your thoughts on that? And a larger question, I'm just curious, because this is one that kind of agitates people sometimes and just like to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Is housing a human right or is it an earned right? If you have certain income, which seems to be also a notion in our world. And should Baltimore City put some teeth into its law for inclusionary housing? What would that mean if all of a sudden we had to build a Harbor Point, but that 10% of all those apartments or whatever they had to do them were for low-income people? What would that mean? 410-319-8888. So everybody could enjoy a little bit of the Harbor. But while you're sitting on contaminated earth. But anyway, 410-319-8888 is the number. I'd like to hear your thoughts on all of this. But this question of housing as a human right, I mean, I didn't mean to make it sound tongue-in-cheek because it's a very serious issue. I mean, what does that mean? And how does that play out in other places? How does that play out in other places?
So let's start fundamentally with where does the concept of housing as a human right come from? As a country, we're actually much further along in implementing that concept than we often think that we are. The International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which was signed by President Carter in 1979, contains the concept of a human right to housing, which includes many elements such as sufficient affordable housing for people, that is near access to schools and hospitals and food, that is culturally appropriate for the population, that is accessible to people, including people with disabilities, et cetera. So that is a concept that our country, at least our president in 1979, signed on to. At the same time, in fact, a year earlier, the American Bar Association, the National Association of Lawyers, endorsed the International Covenant on Economic, Cultural, and Social Rights as something that is fundamental to that association's beliefs. A major goal of the American Bar Association is promoting human rights in our society in the United States, and they endorsed that concept. And then in August of this year, the House of Delegates of the American Bar Association, the American Bar Association has its own legislative body. Mm-hmm. The House of Delegates of the American Bar Association endorsed a policy to implement that concept of a human right to housing. And that policy, which is available on the American Bar Association website, which is ambar.org, it is wonderful in its clear simplicity, which is urging federal, state, and local governments to prioritize funding to implement the human right to housing, including prioritizing funding for developing affordable housing and ensuring that everybody has access to affordable housing. And then there is a very meaty and extensive report that goes along with it that talks extensively about how the human right to housing has been implemented both in the United States and internationally. What's exciting is that I think that we can take wonderful lessons learned from jurisdictions in the United States and internationally and look to what we can implement here in Baltimore. For example, in New York City, many years ago, actually, the city responded to the AIDS crisis by recognizing that one of the major ways that it could provide health care to people with HIV and AIDS was to ensure that they had a stable housing resource. And so the city council, passed legislation that gave people who have HIV and AIDS a human right to housing. They have an immediate access to housing if they go to the housing department and they request a housing unit. That is the kind of concept that recognizes the needs of a community. It recognizes the intersection of healthcare and housing, and it recognizes that communities sometimes need to offer immediate housing to people. It's not free housing. They still need to pay for that housing, but to offer that housing to
people. I mean, one of the things that works in public housing, and people get kicked out for very little reason often onto the street, is that if you're in public housing, what is the percentage of your income that you have to pay?
30%
of your income. Mm-hmm. To pay. So public housing, people think it's free housing, but it's 30% of a person's income, no matter what that income is or how it's derived.
That's right.
So I think that's an important thing people don't realize about public housing. They think that everybody's getting this free housing when they're not. So if you're making $20,000 a year, it's 30% of that $20,000 a year that you're paying for housing.
Right. That's
so that's important to kind of people to realize, I think about. And so folks, you haven't called in yet. I really want to hear your thoughts. 410-319-8888, because we have these shows in housing. The people are very concerned about this. You flood these lines with your thoughts.
I want to hear
what you have to say about this and what your own situations are. 410-319-8888. Well, go ahead.
I don't want listeners to miss this point, that one of the critical reasons that we need a human right to housing in Baltimore, in Maryland, and nationwide is there is no community, there is no county in this country where someone who is working minimum wage and working 40 hours a week or even 50 hours a week can afford housing at the fair market rent in that
community.
Nowhere
in the United States of America.
Nowhere in the United States. That problem is even more true in Maryland. Maryland is actually the fifth least affordable state in the country. And in Baltimore City,
wow,
a family of four would actually have to work 135 hours a week to afford rent at the fair market rent. We are just talking about
135 hours a week?
Correct.
At the minimum wage?
Correct. So what we are talking about is creating housing that is affordable to people who are working at the minimum wage, just making sure that we have housing units that they can afford to rent.
So how would that play out, Jeff, in your scenario in Baltimore? What would have to happen, given where we are now, what would have to happen for people to have affordable housing, whether you're making a minimum wage or whether you're making what we call living wage, which is only $13-$15 an hour, which is, you know, still not a great deal of money. What would it mean to have affordable housing? How would it happen?
Let me use an analogy that I use in the paper that will be distributed on Monday. Until the middle toward the end of the 19th century, just slightly more than 100 years ago, there was no guarantee of education to the ordinary American. You got educated if you could afford it.
There's no right to education in our Constitution. That's
no,
not there.
No.
It's not there.
Right. And in most places, you know, poor folks didn't have access to education. You know, working people didn't have much access to education. But as the economic situation changed and it seemed that the populace needed to be better educated to work more complicated jobs, we created education in the public sector so that everybody could be educated. We thought that it was a good idea for everyone in society, no matter rich or poor. I won't say black or white because it didn't work that way then, but everyone had essentially a legal right to a public education. But it didn't happen until people struggled over it, and it took more than 100 years after the founding of this nation for that to happen. Right? That's education. Another one I like a lot is fire protection. We all expect if our home or our neighbor's home catches on fire that someone's going to come and put out that fire. And as quickly as possible, we appreciate that. But it's also a right of citizenship, essentially, if you live in an urban area. There are rural areas that, you know, have volunteer companies. But every urban area in the United States has a fire department that comes to your house, and you don't have to pay the people when they arrive in order for them to put out the fire. But this was not true until the end of the 19th century. Before that, and there's a wonderful scene in Martin Scorsese's film,
New York, right.
There's a wonderful scene. You know, someone's house catches on fire. Two competing fire companies come, and they have a brawl in the street instead of putting out the fire because each one wants to put it out and extort money and goods from the homeowner. That's the way it was until the end of the 19th century. But we figured out that there's a better way to do that. We have a taxation system. In theory, people contribute as much as they can. Now, it isn't really fair, but, you know, it's on the way there. And then through those public dollars, we hire and train people to put out our fires. Now, why don't we think of housing using that same model? Everyone needs it. It's a basic human need. We could, through the tax system, create a sufficient supply of affordable housing and not have people sleeping on the street. We could do that. And in some countries, they do that. In England, about 25% of the housing is in the public sector. As we've mentioned on this program before, in Vienna, Austria, 60% of the housing is in the public sector. And, you know, Vienna is a very nice place to go. You generally don't see people sleeping in doorways on the street because people have access to good housing. As a community, they believe that everyone should be helped to the extent that they need help, and everyone should contribute to the extent that they can contribute. And this is an ethos that we need to fight even harder for in this city and in this country.
And even to add on to that, South Africa, when it created its new constitution, a good part of which addresses past injustices in that country, included the concept of a right to housing. And that has been used and that has been litigated in South Africa to great benefit of all the people in that country. And I think that it's frankly quite surprising that our country even with a president signing this international covenant that contains the human right to housing in 1979, that we have actually moved so far away from the human right to housing since then.
So I'm going to encourage everybody to join. Everybody, I'll be there Monday night. I'm not on the panel, not working, but participating in any way I can. And we'll hopefully get sound from that night so we can let you all hear what happened that evening. But to join us Monday night, September 16th, 7 p.m. at the Enoch Pratt Free Library's Wheeler Auditorium, 400 Cathedral Street, of the Homeless People's Representation Project, Maryland Affordable Housing Coalition, present The Importance of Housing, where we look at the question of National Housing Trust. Congressman Elijah Cummings will be speaking, always a great event in itself. There'll be discussions by a number of people on the panel, Paul Graziano and Jeff Singer included, being moderated by Antonia Fasanelli. So please join us there. We'll all be there. You can get more information at hprplaw.org. And Antonia Fasanelli, Jeff Singer, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to thank Jane Harrison as well for sponsoring all of this.
Absolutely. A longtime housing advocate has sponsored this since 2010.
She's a very generous and good human being.
A great
she really is.
A great Baltimorean.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can podcast the show, find information about the event we talked about and our guests and the work they do. Links to all the sites we talked about by going to steinershow.org, steinershow.org for the information. We can also download our podcast. You can also listen to and download our podcast now on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay tuned for Michelle Martin and tell me more. Take care. Talk to you Monday.